Paper Money, the bi-weekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from Rifts to Rune Wars, from Palladium Books to Fantasy Flight Games. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Red Kip.
Today is March 13th, 2011.
That's right. It's another Sunday, our second in a row.
That's correct. And which leads us right into our standard news show feature, corrections. want to apologize for the last show we did, which we recorded one Sunday and then released, I think, the next Sunday. That's the because the audio was terrible. I spent many days trying to get rid of reverb before throwing my hands up and admitting that this professional sound man's credo of the best way to get rid of reverb is not to record it. Anyway, suffice to say, the audio last week was terrible. And I think there was even a chunk that I was supposed to edit out, and I completely forgot about it because I was dealing with the terrible audio. So, David Miller, thank you for being on the show last week. I'm sorry it sounded like you may or may not have been on a submarine. So, you know, like I said...
You mean we weren't?
Like I said in the show notes, after 45 episodes, it was bound to happen sooner or later that I would have terrible audio and have to use it. So, again, my apologies to everyone about the audio for the last Sunday recording. Hopefully we won't have that problem this week or ever again, quite frankly.
Ever. Yeah, I like the ever again part.
Suffice to say, one of the other things I wanted to talk about is our new showtime. We are going to be releasing the shows Sunday afternoon. We had traditionally been doing Friday afternoons. Given the situation in real life, which basically means that I can't edit the show during the day anymore, we're now releasing the show Sunday afternoon. So hopefully you'll still get it in time for your driving to work on Monday morning. But just so you know, slightly less of a hang time between the release of the show and your Monday morning commute. That said, we got some news this week. We're not going to have a guest, and we are going to do our Rhett is going to walk us through things you need to do to start up a game store. And I will play, of course, the credulous listener who has lots of questions about that. So, well, I didn't mean that the way it sounded.
I was going to say our listeners are pretty polite and nice.
That's okay. That's true. I didn't say yeah. I'll have questions for Rhett, but I'm going to kind of let him run with it a little bit. Him having some actual numbers on the subject and me not. So that said, let's plunge right into the news. I think I said plunge, but I meant plunge.
You did. You did say plunge. I'm not sure where that came from.
I was thinking plotting, maybe.
You know, I was looking earlier, you know, it says Ben Clark as well in our show notes, and I was really entertained by that because, you know.
Because I'm not. Yeah. So, suffice to say, Tomy bought our RC2 this week. Tomy is the huge British toy corporation, RC2, an American toy company. Very few games between these two companies, but what it does mean is that Tomy and RC2 combined makes them much more of a third leg of the Mattel Hasbro and now Tomy RC2, Barstool, so to speak. Like I said, this is a good combination, a natural fit, and it'll be interesting to see if they go into the game market. Certainly it's what Mattel has done to compete with Hasbro as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Tomy, you know, years and years ago, went into the electronic gaming market when that was an upcoming trend, probably 20, 30 years ago. And
I now feel old.
Yes, but the answer here on that one is I'm in agreement with you. I suspect we'll see some of the stuff, you know, having seen Lego move into that direction to a certain extent. I suspect in the next few years we'll see Tomy come out with some new board games as well.
It will be interesting to see. And on the other side of the industry, the Purple Pawn this week has a preview of the BattleTech 25th Anniversary Edition box set. That's coming out March 30th. And their opinion is that it's gorgeous. It's fantastic. It's an amazing product. And I might have to buy one.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll leave my bias out of this and just say, of course.
Yeah, gosh, Red, you involved in that at all? suffice to say, I have the previous incarnation of the box set, there were ones before. It's gotten steadily more, weighty as time has gone on. The new one is like a 16x16x4 inch box, absolutely huge, mounted map boards. It's got 25 detailed plastic figures, and then two super detailed high quality plastic figures in there of a Loki and a Thor, I think.
Yeah.
Crammed full of there's the quick start rules. There's the introductory rule book, which runs 80 pages, which really covers about 90% of everything you need to know. I think the only things that aren't on there, according to the Purple Pawn, running on pavement and some of the advanced weaponry. So tons of stuff in there. Neat looking product coming out March 30th. And, you know, we were reporting on the hubbub over at Catalyst Game Labs last year and wondering if this product was ever going to see the light of day. So glad to see that it's actually going to hit the streets.
Yeah, you know, I think this is yet another indication of the recovery of Catalyst. Whatever their incidents were a year ago, it's all behind them and they're moving forward. We won't go into other details that we happen to know from our position where we are of other things that Catalyst is going to be doing in 2011. But, you know, Catalyst is back and running at full guns again.
And so it's an excellent product, $50 coming out end of the month. I already own the old one. I'm thinking about this one. I got to admit. That said, let's move on to Traveler. Now, we've been talking a lot about iPhone games coming out and their crossover to the gaming market, but we've been focusing mostly on board games. A Traveler massively multiplayer online RPG is coming out. It's targeted for the iPhone, which I find interesting. I guess, and partly because owning an iPhone, I find it a very limited format for gaming. And I know I don't play Angry Birds, so I guess I'm biased here. But in terms of an MMORPG, I think it's a very interesting move. Okay, but anyways, it was just announced. It's coming out. It's another example of the crossovers from the game industry, the pen and paper industry, to the electronic industry. I wish them the best. I don't know how it's going to go. I don't know how MMORPGs are doing on portable gaming devices.
I have no feel for that one at all.
Yeah, I know you're more in tune with the Xbox and stuff than I am, but anyways, interesting piece of news there. Other news, and our last solely gaming-related one coming out this week, the one-page dungeon design contest for 2011 is running now through April 1st. All right, so you have to do everything for the dungeon on one sheet of A4 paper. Map, keys, non-game system-specific details and things like that, all on one page. I think this is really cool.
Yeah, I like things like this. I do like when, you know, you're given limited formats, because I think that really helps developers and designers learn how to focus.
Yes, and you know, we've been talking. A lot of our listeners are have asked, you know, how do I get into the industry? This is a good way.
Yeah, this is a great one.
This is your calling card when you go and talk to Fantasy Flight or someone else. Say, well, yeah, I won the one-page design contest, or I finished in the top 10. We would be remiss if we did not mention the world's shortest dungeon design. There is a room. In the room, there's an orc. He's guarding a pie. That's it. That's your entire adventure right there.
Yeah.
So I think I delivered that poorly. So
it wasn't so bad.
As is our wont, I will edit it out in post. And
so everybody prepare to hear that one over and over.
That's exactly. I think we should just put that in every week. Ben tells a bad joke. All right. Anyways, on a more serious note, obviously, everyone has heard about the earthquake in Japan by now, and it's the news is getting worse really by the hour. Happened on Friday, and it's early Friday morning, and it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. Everything, you know, they had an earthquake, they had a tsunami, they've had a nuclear meltdown. And so it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And Drive-Thru RPG just ran their New Zealand promo. They're not doing quite the same thing for Japan. What they are doing, though, is that you can make a $5 donation at Drive-Thru RPG and the related sites. And it will go directly to the Red Cross. So basically, you're not going to get, you know, $300 worth of product for $20 or whatever like they just did for the New Zealand thing. But you can make a $5 donation to them, and it will all go to the Red Cross. Dark Covenant, I believe, is selling, Dork Covenant, or Dork Tower, is selling Dork Covenant for $5 instead of $15 online. I want to say there's one or two other game promos out there that you can help with the disaster relief in Japan. But again, if you can help, please do so.
Yeah, we're going to continue to see more programs get put in place here. I think what we're looking at is people just, you know, knee-jerk, instant, here's what we can do right this second to try to help you to, you know, make donations.
Correct. So like I said, if you can spare $5 today, drivethroughrpg.com or Dork Tower, I know are helping out, might be a good idea. All right, Rhett, let's move into our commentary.
Yeah, well, this time we're talking about how to do a brick-and-mortar setup. You know, a lot of people have asked us questions about, you know, what's the difference between one and the other, starting out with an online company and starting out with an actual retail outlet. So I thought I'd give you some insight into things you need to think about and potentials about, you know, what kind of capital investment we're talking.
Yes, I think that's going to be a huge issue for a lot of people because, honestly, people realize it's expensive, okay? I don't know that people realize how expensive.
Right.
So we'll try and get you a few numbers there. And the other thing is that now Rhett's going to be talking about this, and I get to punch holes in it. I mean, I get to ask him questions about
it. He's the devil's advocate, if you haven't caught that one.
Okay, so Rhett, now your first thing here is location.
Location. We'll start out with the real estate important question always, which is location, location, location. Where do you set your store? You know, you really have a lot of questions that you need to answer first. How much can you afford for rent? The next thing you have to ask yourself is, why am I putting it here versus there? You know, do I have a market? Are there plenty of people? Am I putting myself in a strip mall? Is this a separate store location? Is this part of a major mall location? And it comes down to, in part, what the next statement I'm going to make is, which is theme. What is it your store is trying to do as far as how is it selling whatever it's selling? What is it?
Yeah, that was something I wanted to ask you about.
Targeting around.
Yeah. I think this is a decision you almost have to make before you even go for location is, am I comics and games? Am I games and comics? Am I just games? Am I role-playing game heavy? Am I board game heavy? Am I going to be the last square in Madison, Wisconsin and go super heavy on historical miniatures? But it seems to me that this is something that you need to figure out almost immediately.
Yeah, right? As you point out, that is probably the very first thing you have to consider. What is my store doing that's going to make it interesting, unique, and bring in an audience? And is there an audience there to bring in?
Correct.
You know, I want to make the best historical miniature store in the entire United States. No one plays historical miniatures in, you know, my location of Nowhereville, Kansas. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't help you then. So then what's your next choice? And, you know, as Ben points out, one of the other big questions is it just a game store or do you have other things to bring? You know, am I looking at you know, my next door neighbor runs a hardware store, and he's got this extra retail space, which is, you know, no longer available. And he's asked me if I want to come over and, you know, run something there. And I said, well, you know, I could do a whole game section for you. A lot of different ways to think about this. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing here is that you want to consider is that as gamers, we all have our pet things. Okay. Rhett is a miniatures guy. I'm a board games guy. You know, I have good friends who are super role-playing heavy. You can't let, to some extent, you're opening a game store because you love this stuff, but you need to also make a business decision.
Right.
Okay. So, for instance, I was looking the other day, right? I am currently working in Jacksonville Beach, Florida, and I could probably open a board game-only boutique in Jacksonville Beach and sell to the beach community and vacationers and things like that. I think I could go do okay with role-playing games. But if I were to open a store here, I would probably be able to do the board, you know, I would probably be able to target that Euro game crowd and do well here and bring in a lot of non-gamers. Okay. If I were opening near, a college or a high school, I'd probably want to go role-playing heavy. Right, because that mix is going to be more, I'm going to get more of that audience in the door there. Does that make any sense? Or
I think that, again, I think there's two things you have to consider. One is your target audience, and do they exist? And that's always a big question, no matter what retail aspect you're going.
Well, that's a good question, right? We've had this discussion before. What should be a target audience for a game store? I mean, what do you consider kind of the demographic here?
Well, the biggest demographic that we know of is, you know, the age category from 13 to 22 is the money. That's where you're going to get your best money. Simply because they have more cash, less expenses. Mm-hmm. And then it comes into your location. You know, if you're near a military post, if you're near a school, especially like colleges, universities, they're huge. A lot of income, a lot of disposable income, a lot of free time, big gaming crowd, and they do a lot of internal recruiting. You know, they continue to recruit and recruit and recruit from a regular ongoing changeover in people, which is one of the things that, you know, people kind of don't remember about those things. It's not just their age. It's that every year, there's a new group of people coming in that weren't there before.
Yes, yes. So, all right, I have one more question on location, and then we'll move on to more of the internal stuff here. You don't usually see game stores in big malls, right? You'll never see the Dungeon Pit located next to Claire's, okay, at your local mall. And I think part of the reason of that is price per square foot based on traffic. And Well, you might go, wow, I need to, you know, get into the big mall here because there's a ton of people here. Look again at who's at the mall, okay? I don't know that it's your target audience. You might want to be in that strip mall that's a little dingier, that's a ton cheaper, because you're going to be able, your cost per square foot is going to be so much lower. Does that make sense? Right? Is that a correct analysis of that? Or
I was going to say that's in part true, but, you know, we have seen a number of very successful locations in major malls. Again, it comes down to one of the bigger things, which is how much cash do you have? How long can you do this to establish yourself in the first run? And then the other question is, what are you doing to bring people through the front door? The Euro games being now as popular as they are may be strong enough to help you bring into a mall location a lot of interest. I'll tell you this much. If you were running a store in Mall of America or Woodfield or somewhere in downtown Manhattan, the likelihood is you do not have game space. There is no place to play because you can't afford that extra rent.
Good point. That's an extremely good point. And we'll talk about that in a minute. So now one of the thing that you have after, you know, talking about your product mix, your theme, is fixtures. Now you had that way high up on the list. And so I was really curious about that.
Well, it's one of your chief costs in setup. And, people tend to not think about what their fixtures are. Your fixtures cover so many different things, including the most important thing, which is what does your store look like? Are you walking into, Ugly Bob's comic store where, there's a, it started out with, this dingy rug that he never
I think
replaced.
I've been there.
The previous owner had been a hardware store and, he never bothered to clean the place. It still had the same rug. He never painted the walls. He used whatever was in there in the first place, which is, 2x4s nailed up to, as A-frames to hold products. He's never bothered to clean afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. And the first thing you do is you walk in as a new gamer into this building and you wonder if you need a shot. And you can take that in whatever direction your shot preference would be. Or you think about this from the beginning and you say, what do I like as an experience when I go into a store? There should be decent lighting so that I can actually see the products on the, on the shelves. There should be room so that everybody can move around inside there. There should be security questions answered when I'm, when my employees and myself are at the register or wherever it is that we happen to need to be in general locations. Can we see the store? Can we make sure that, there aren't lots and lots of blind spots where people are shoplifting from us, because losing inventory is a major concern that you have to think of. And that's one of the things that fixtures cover. How do you display stuff? It does include things like, is this a bright and cheery location?
All right, well, I have a question. So we're going to have to buy shelves, okay?
Absolutely.
And we're going to have to buy row after row after row of peg hook, apparently, if we're carrying miniatures. But for shelving, is there a height? Do you say, you know what, I don't want the 8 foot shelves, even though I'm going to get more out of my floor space because I can't see. Or do I want the 4 to 6 foot shelves where I'm not going to get quite as much product on the floor, but it creates a more open feeling in the store, and I can see from the register if I've got kids in the back horsing around in the Games Workshop section.
Yeah, well, as I say, that comes down to, coming up with a good floor plan, laying it out, talking to someone who's in the fixture market, when you go into a fixture store, and there's plenty around the country, discuss your needs. Because, maybe you do want something like the grocery store's floor to ceiling, something that they can pretty much get you your overstock way up above where you're going to have to go and get it at some future time, but it's still on display. Your theme is still going to, dictate a lot of this. Personally, I think that you're better off with lower shelves. I think that if you're operating with the 6 foot shelf, there's a lot you can do with that. And it definitely gives you a lot of visual. And initially, at least, you're probably not going to be able to fill those giant shelves anyway. It's a long-term process.
Well, let's talk
And
about
can you,
that.
the other thing is, when you think about your fixtures, think about how they can expand.
Well, they now the next thing you had on your list is inventory, okay?
Well, actually,
And
no, was amenities, even ahead of inventories.
by all means, yes.
Which are things like, do you have a washroom? Is there a public washroom for people to use? Is there a private washroom for your employees to use? Do you have any additional things that might be of use in your store for the general public as far as, oh, outside of your standard inventory, which is why I kind of lump these two close together. Do you carry soda and pop and candy and all those kind of odds and ends types of things for your customers? This is not part of your regular sales items, but it's, are they there to attract a young crowd? There's a bunch of kids in the area. If I have candy, they're going to come into the store after school and pick up some candy. Oh, and by the way, they're going to look at my millions of dollars worth of inventory and, go,
Yeah.
hey, that would be cool.
Well, now I would say that as we're dealing with gamers, that I would definitely sell pop and candy. I'd have a bathroom, but I wouldn't worry about a sink.
I'm
sorry, that's a little joke there. But no, I think that's a huge plus. I was recently at a game store somewhere nearby. I don't want to mention the game store. They didn't sell any kind of pop or chips or whatever. And that was an amenity that I'd gotten used to at your store, Rhett. And so consequently, I ended up going down the street to a convenience store, getting that stuff, and then coming back in. They lost my sale, right? That was... I know it's huge, okay? I mean, I bought a dollar bag of Doritos and a Diet Coke for $1.25. But that was 75 cents to 85 cents worth of profit that store could have collected.
I was going to say, I know what the general sales for the store are. And frankly, our margin on goodies are pretty nice. And we sell a lot of it. It is not unusual for us at our store to do about $50 a day in pop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
seem like much, but you know, 365, add it up, folks.
Yep. And well, now the one thing that I thought your store had that I thought was insanely useful for the gamer crowd is they have a copy machine.
We do, There are things like that as well. You don't have to go anywhere. With a modern store, I would also think about Wi-Fi access. I would think about printer access, things of those natures. You can charge people for it if you need to.
Well, I have one other question about amenities. Sure. Actually, this is kind of the big one. How much floor space do you think is appropriate for play area in most stores? Is it a 50-50 split? Do you put the play area in the back? Do you put it on the side? Do a shotgun approach where you've got the store on the right and the play area on the left, or what do you, because I think play area makes the store. Okay. Now it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have vaulted marble arches or anything like that, but having people play in the store creates a sense of community around the store, which that's what separates you from funagain.com is you've got that community around the store. So what's your thought on that?
In general, I go back again, it's in part based off of what you can afford,
mm-hmm.
but I think you need a reasonably large area. I would say that if you can run at least four standard games in your store, 3 to 4 is probably your minimum.
Mm-hmm.
If you can expand upon that, great, but 3 to 4 games is probably your minimum. So what you're talking is an area that will accommodate your standard tables, which are, 8 by 3.5, I think it is.
Mm. I usually plus, say 4 by 8, but yeah.
Well, the gaming table's 4 by 8, but the actual table's, smaller than that. Okay. Then there's the seating arrangement because, people have to get past each other, and be able to sit there.
Mm-hmm.
Gamers do like to sit. And, those are the types of things. The other thing that I'd consider is while my store may have a really nice cushy rug to walk on, I would make sure that the gaming area is something that can clean up very easy. The lowest maintenance level stuff is what I'm looking for. Because gamers being gamers are going to spill stuff, they're going to drop stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And like washrooms, if you don't clean them on a regular basis, people are just going to walk in, look at it, and go, yeah, and walk out.
Well,
I'm a big fan of low maintenance for your gaming area. Now, if it's part of your regular store, maybe it visually separates it if you change from tile to carpet type of thing. If you really want to see one of the absolute best gaming related stores, take a look at the Fantasy Flight store. That thing's crazy cool, but it's a Target. It's not what I expect most retail outlets to be able to do.
Right. Well, now for the record, most of the play areas I've been in have a bare concrete floor while the retail area has a carpeted floor, which is nice because then, right, easy cleanup for the gaming area. And a nice environment for the retail area. But I have to point out, there was one store I was in New Orleans. They were very Warhammer heavy. And they had the play tables right in the center of the store, and then all the product was, for the most part, was around the rim or in the back where the register was. And I thought that was a poor arrangement, because you had all of your, well, your Warhammer players up front, who, and so what happens is the normal people would come in the store, and I thought maybe, I mean, now granted, Warhammer looks beautiful on a table, but you've got your rowdy, you know, game players and stuff like that up front, and I thought maybe that would probably be something to avoid.
Well, you know, one of the things that you do have to consider is how disruptive is your game. No matter how pleasant and everything else that is, you know, how disruptive is it to your business aspect of it? And you should plan on that. You should plan on the fact that, you know, people get loud, arguments will occur on occasion, politics will be discussed by people sitting around the table. And do you want that going on at the point near your registers? You know, yeah. Do you want this distraction, which is effectively what we're talking about here?
Yeah. So something to think about.
Yeah. So next, you know, the part that almost everybody starts with is, you know, thinking about, which to me is, you know, much lower down the list, is your inventory. You know, what are you bringing in? How much can you afford to bring in? Generally speaking, depends on, again, how large a store you're talking about. But an initial inventory of $10,000 to $30,000 is a lot smaller than you think it is.
Yes. In fact, I was in my prep for the show, before I abandoned all idea of me producing some numbers on this, I was actually trying to calculate, just based on a standard board game shelf, what your dollars per square foot would be, right? So if you had, you know, if you wanted to stock, say, one each of the Settlers titles and one each of the other titles, I was staggered by the you know, what it was going to, I mean, $10,000 is going to get you about, something, I think I worked out that literally about 10 shelf feet long by about 6 high.
Yeah.
You know, if you stacked it edge on. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, figuring an average box width of about, 3 to 3.5 inches. So I was like, wow. Okay. Now you walk into your average game store where you've got, you know, miniatures down the sides, you've got Games Workshop, you've got all these board games and stuff in the center. You might have comics out. $10,000 does not go as far as it might. Think about it, okay? At your purchasing price, okay, when you're starting is on a $100 copy of Dust Tactics is $50.
Yeah. And well, effectively, one of the things we should start out with is what are your costs? Let's benchmark most of this at around 50%, just to make your math fast and easy. Yes, and it's actually probably good if you're getting 50%.
Yeah, honestly, let's veer into this a little bit when we're talking about inventory. Here in the U.S., there are only a few hobby distributors, right? There's, in essence, there's two, maybe three.
There's two majors.
Yes.
Probably another half a dozen smaller ones.
Right.
I should say there are three majors, because there's a major book trade one that should also always
correct,
be considered.
Correct. PSI is the book
PSI.
Trade.
Yeah.
And what are the other two? Alliance is that the big one, and
Alliance and ACD. The three of those are the primary ones.
And when you're just starting out, this is where you're gonna get your product from. Because you're not necessarily gonna go to Fantasy Flight Games and say, yeah, I want $3,000 for the product this week. So when you buy from them, my understanding, I think your base discount is going to be about 54%. Or not 54%. Sorry, you're going to be paying 54%.
You're paying about 54%.
When you start out. Right. Now, if you go up above X thousand dollars, that starts dropping down again. And if you go below X thousand dollars, it starts going up again. But, you know, it's 50. You're paying 54%.
Oh, there's a lot of nets out there.
Yep.
There's a lot of short discounts out there, depending on, you know, a lot of magazines, for example, yes, are short discount.
Correct. But now, if you order, what's the cutoff? Like $400 for free freight?
I think it's closer to $300. But
okay, so somewhere between $300 and $400, you have to order that much product at your discounted price, right? Not retail price, to get free freight. Okay, folks, you have to get free freight.
Freight in the long term will add enormously to your expenses.
Correct.
That's a big margin that you're giving away. You're probably giving away another 2 to 3%.
Oh, I'd say you're giving away more. I'd say with current prices, you're giving away 5.
It depends a lot on your freight costs and everything else. So let's go back to the old average, yeah, which is 3%.
Okay. So there's that issue with your inventory. And so now, Brett, I'm gonna quit injecting my numbers into this and let you go back to what you were talking about.
Well, and like I say, again, it comes down to, you know, how much, but you know, when you go into a well-established store, you're probably looking, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. If you go to Games Plus and you can go online and you can kind of get some photos of what Games Plus looks like at gamesplus-.com or their Facebook page, what you're looking at is a store that is probably close to $500,000 worth of inventory. And you're going to look at that store and go, you know, that's a really nicely stocked store. And then you're going to sit there and go, oh my God, that's $500,000. And it really doesn't take that long to get there. If you go into any depth, if, you know, let's say that you've decided that, you know, Games Workshop stores locally, I got this huge Games Workshop community. I'm going to bring in all this really cool Games Workshop stuff. I'm going to stock some of the important ones too deep. You know, they average about $50 a unit. To do a reasonably well-stocked gaming area, you're probably looking at, you want to do $20,000 to $30,000 worth of inventory. And you should really price all of this out before you put nickel one into that store so that you know what you're looking at as far as your costs are concerned.
Yes, and if you've already gone that far, remember, you can make your inventory go farther by stacking it with the fat side of the box out instead of edge on.
Yes.
Your store will look much more crowded that way.
Yes. You can front-face stuff, and you should always front-face some things because you're trying to use the appeal of someone's marketing concept, and a lot of time is spent on that for manufacturers to make things visually appealing. And you want to do that. You want to exploit that. You want to do your end caps and things of that nature to attract people to products. So the other part, the last aspect I have in that is value added, which is what else are you doing in your store, which is going to make your store a place that people want to go to as opposed to, let's say, online.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's something that I wanted to talk about in your next category that you had here, which was operations and salaries.
Yes.
We all have the typical comic or game store employee in mind as the semi-sneering know-it-all who isn't a good salesperson. And this is something that you as the owner need to cultivate in your employees and in yourself is that, look, you may think Settlers is passe, but, you know, for grandma who just walked in or businessman Joe who just walked in, who just read about it in the Wall Street Journal, for him, it's something new. And you have to be able to sell stuff that you don't think is super cool.
We'll start into the operations end of it, which is, you know, the first thing is employees and salaries. And, you know, that's not so much an expense, but, you know, who you're after. And I'm not sure that I want to go too far into this.
Okay.
But you know, what you do want to do is you want your employees and yourself to be appealing. You don't want to, you know, bathe regularly, groom yourself reasonably. Wait,
you don't want to do that?
No, you do want to. You don't want to turn your customers off for any reason.
Gotcha. Okay.
And you know, the big thing here is you have to think that even though I've, you know, at some point you will have an established community, you will always have new people coming in, and you never want to scare off customers. And at the very beginning, in particular, you have to build that community. So, you know, those are things you have to think about when hiring. But those are different questions for a different time. We're just talking about the dollars and, you know, putting yourself together here. So, you know, when we're getting in operations, we'll start out with what probably is the single most important one for a number of reasons, salaries. How much is it going to cost you to run the store with the people that you're employing and presumably giving yourself a salary? The reason I put this at the top is simply because it's work, and no one does work for free. You know, you have to have a living, you know, unless you have a trust fund and you're set for life, and you know who you are out there. You know, this is it. This is how you're going to make a living. Maybe it's a part-time investment on your part and you have, you know, full-time employees that you trust and, you know, can do your operations and so on and so forth. Maybe it is what you're doing on your own.
Okay, so do you pay a minimum wage for your staff? Do you provide insurance? I know some stores have different philosophies on this than others. My initial opinion on this is that as a startup store owner, you're going to be there 60 hours a week. And you're going to hire a couple of folks part-time to help out, and you're going to pay them minimum wage to minimum wage plus $2.
Pretty much. I think that's an accurate estimation. You have to decide how much it is you're trying to make personally. You know, that's the starting point. And we're talking a salary. We're not talking your investment. And that's a separate question. You know, you're looking as a business for your investment to pay you differently. But we're talking about salary. This is, you know, I'm going to be paying myself $20,000 a year because, frankly, at $20,000 a year, you know, I can make most of my ends meet. You know, it would be nice that my store starts providing me an additional income from,
right,
you know, my revenue streams, et cetera, which is outside of your salary. But again, you know, the number of employees, and there's a number of questions and they're going to be involved in that. And one of those is hours. When is the store open? How often is the store open? I've seen people come up with some of the strangest store hours, you know, because they're like trying to fit it in between their jobs. Stores generally have their best business around the noon hour. You know, people are off for lunch and they can jaunt out and, you know, do a little bit of shopping then.
Right.
Right after school lets out, so around the 3 or 4 o'clock point where the kids are out and able to go out and do their post school types of things. Mm-hmm. And then the big business is typically starting at about 5 o'clock and runs to whatever your late night is. And that depends on a lot of things, on the day of the week, who you're attracting in. And obviously, you know, your weekends are always your best days.
Right.
And that's in Friday, Saturday, Sunday is your weekend, by the way, in case you don't really understand that Friday is part of the weekend for retail. And that's because people have more free time at that point, mm-hmm, and therefore out doing their shopping and fun stuff like that.
Well, now you have utilities down here. Is that really a big factor? I mean, really, we're talking about what, electricity?
Well, you know, you're talking lots of different things for utilities. You have to heat the place. You have to air condition the place. Maybe that's covered by your rent. But if not, you have to take those into consideration. And yes, you do have to pay for your electricity. Not that they're huge expenses.
Right.
They are expenses. And you do need to you do need to factor those all in too. Just don't ignore them. The next one I think is even much more critical than your utilities, which is maintenance. And maintenance is really a lot of different things. Maintenance is keeping the store clean, keeping it running, you know, broken windows, leaks in the roof. You know, who's responsible for all that? Mm-hmm. Doing your contracts and stuff initially as a, you know, as presuming they're renting this space as opposed to buying your own building outright.
Yeah, for folks, for the record, Rhett and I both recommend that you rent or lease your business space, not purchase it.
Again, yeah, I was going to say, again, unless you, you know, you're a major investor and, you know, you've built your own strip mall, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Which are few and far between. And by the way, if you are, talk to me.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, so maintenance is important, and certainly we go back to the presenting a nice looking store,
right?
The maintenance thing.
Because maintenance does cover things like the wear and tear of your floor. At some point, you really need to replace your carpeting. It probably won't be within the first 3 years, which is your
If you're making it that long,
If you've made it that long, you're probably okay. But you know, there are lots of things that you aren't going to remember or consider on these things right off the bat, which is, you know, broken chairs, broken tables, expansion of fixtures, and so on and so forth, which falls under the maintenance category. That's not as expensive, but the problem is it's usually not planned for. So if you run into a big one, it can, you know, it can really throw off your your dollars for, you know, for that year. The next one comes in is operations, and, you know, operations in general is what does it cost me to run, you know, all of my, things like paper. You know, I've got this copy machine out there. I've got a fax machine that I'm getting my information from. I print out a number of things. You know, all the manufacturers send me these really cool things, and I'm printing those things out. I have register tape that I have to, you know, replace on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. I have all my costs for my banking.
Actually, I wanted to address that in that, right, you're going to pay a monthly fee to American Express and, well, not American Express, really, but, you know, whoever is your credit card processor.
Right.
Okay. And that monthly fee is going to be, you know, probably $30 to $300 or something like that, probably depending on your volume.
Plus a percentage.
Plus a percentage. Now, that percentage.
Plus a percentage.
Yeah, that percentage is going to vary, but let's, 2.5% to 3.5%?
Depends on who it is. They're regularly making deals out there. Generally speaking, debit cards are much more efficient. That there's tends to be a set fee used for a credit card, mm-hmm. or excuse me, for a debit card, where a credit card actually usually charges an additional percent. Most of the time, it depends on who it is. Most of the time, it runs close to about 1%, 1 to 2%.
Okay, so there's something. I mean, and that's another cost you have to figure in, right? So you bought the product at 52% off. It costs you 2% to sell it. So now, you know, we're at 54%. Excuse me. And then it, you know, you have to figure in your overhead as well.
Yeah, there's all this overhead. And, you know, one of the other big ones that people don't take into consideration is the government, and I don't care who your government is asking for, you know, money regularly. It's going to ask you, it's going to ask you for, you know, money for your employees. It's going to ask you for money from every sale that you make. It's going to ask you for money from, you know, what you've earned, and that's the store, not your salary. And, you know, that's operations is going to include whoever's doing your accounting for you. And you better find someone you trust to do your accounting, because it's the fastest way to go out of business is to have poor accounting.
Correct. Especially because as states and municipalities are strapped for cash, you really want to make sure you have your ducks in a row on that. And It's not, you know, you'll have to file monthly or quarterly with your state or local government, whoever you're collecting tax for.
And, plus the federal government.
Yeah. So you can, so that's not something you can just wing, right? You are going to have to sit there at the end of the day and go through your register receipts, and figure out how much you sold so that you know how much sales tax you collected so that you can tell the state correctly so that you don't get a big hefty fine.
Trust me, one of the worst things that we regularly hear about is people who mess up on their employee taxes, their federal taxes in particular. The government has no sense of humor. They don't care who you are. if you haven't really realized it, because we don't normally think in terms of this, they do own the police. They do own, yes, you know, anything that you need to enforce a rule with, they own them. And they are happy to use them on you. Threat from the government is just something you don't want to add to your plate.
Yes. The best way to describe it is, once you're outside of the rules, it's like being in the movie Brazil. That's because you're just not going to find a satisfactory ending that doesn't involve you forking over cash for a fine. I want to move on a little bit. I apologize, Rhett. But I wanted to talk, you have inventory listed here next. Now, you had inventory listed before, so...
Okay, so what are we talking about here?
Yes.
Now you're talking an inventory system. You need to know what you're selling, and you need to know how to purchase for the future. I have lots and lots of people, and trust me, I work for one of those, who will tell you that, you know, we know exactly what's going on. You know, Bob's been doing this for 20 years. He can tell you exactly what the sales rate on anything is. And I sit there and I snicker, because I worked for a place that we had for longer than anyone I know of, ways to track not only our own inventory and sales oriented things, but also our customers. And, you know, I was looking at something on the like of 8,000 retail outlets, 8 to 10,000 retail outlets and their sales rates on products. What I can tell you is there is always a pattern. And it is very predictable. But if you don't have a good inventory system to be able to look at that pattern, you will make some strange choices. Right. And one of the other things I will say is, when you're looking at numbers, trust them.
Yeah.
That's the big one.
Well, the classic case on this is that employee X says, oh, this product is selling great, I sold two this week. And employee Y says, well, he didn't sell any, so it's not selling well at all.
Game sucks. I've never sold one.
Exactly. And unless you have a system to track what you've sold, folks, the amount of new product that comes out each week is staggering. Okay, if you look at just the number of SKUs, right? It's certainly when you start getting into miniatures, and you're going to lose track of stuff. Now, you'll say to yourself, I'm not going to lose track of stuff. I guarantee you, it's going to get lost in the crowd. You're going to remember some of the major stuff. You're going to remember, you know, Magic. You're going to remember some of the other top products. You're not going to remember everything, and stuff is going to slip through the cracks.
You know, I know this very specifically because we've tested this type of thing out. When I was working in distribution, we tested this a number of times where we would actually contact covertly our retail base who we knew had been sent product and ask them if they had the product. And 50% of them would report they hadn't seen the product because it had sold off their shelf so rapidly that they didn't realize it was even there. And if you don't have a system to track this stuff, you don't reorder it, which means you're missing sales all over the place.
Exactly. And so I'm a big fan of being in IT, and having, in addition to the game industry, I'm a big fan of get a barcode scanner at the register and track everything you can and have a GPU type code for for paints, right? Which are traditionally not necessarily stamped, but right, find a way to track your inventory, especially when you're just starting out, because if it's your first game store, you don't have an old man in the back room who can, you know, who's been ordering games for 20 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Like Rhett. No, I'm teasing. But the point of the matter is that, it's really useful. It's worth the money you're going to spend, right? You're going to need a point of sale system anyway. You might as well get a point of sale system that has some kind of inventory tracking on it. All the distributors, you can download their inventory lists online.
Right.
So you've got something to start with. Now they're not going to have SKU numbers and stuff like that punched in. And so there's going to be some data entry on your end, but I'm a big believer in automating the boring stuff and getting that information done so that later on down the road, you've got quality information.
Yeah. And you know, there's other things that you're looking for. You're looking for questions on shrinkage. You know, what's going out of the store that's not going out of the store.
And I thought you were talking about cold weather.
Yeah, and the only way to really know that is part two of inventory, which is physical inventory. You can't just rely on your point of purchase thing telling you everything that that you think you have sold, you need to go out there and actually do the physical counts. Now, you don't have to do it continuously. You know, you're not necessarily having to inventory weekly on the whole store, but you need to set up a pattern so that each area is inventoried probably every 2 weeks. And the really important ones, whatever your store's obvious mainstay is, you probably want to be inventorying that as often as you're placing reorders. And depending on your store, your turnover, your volumes, et cetera, they can be anywhere from every week to, you know, twice a week. I'm really cautious about anybody who's ordering. If you're ordering less than once every 2 weeks, you need to figure out what you need to do to get that store going again, because that store is in trouble.
Right. You're going to start missing important release dates if you're not getting a shipment at least once a week.
Yeah. Well, you're not just missing new releases, but it's also how long has a product been out of stock? You know, if you have, we'll put a simple role-playing game out there. We'll say that Pathfinder is your top-selling RPG, or your top-selling game. Okay, right. Pathfinder's the thing. You're smart, so you're inventoried too deep on your core books and singles on the rest of your line. And Friday, you have a big rush, and all of that's gone. All your core stuff is gone. But, you know, you only place in a reorder, you know, every 2 weeks. And that was, you know, I just had my inventory come in and it's gone, and I don't have enough other stuff before I can order again. That means you're missing 2 weeks worth of your core game sale.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a position you want to be into. So inventory, right. And then the fact of inventory growth. There's always inventory growth because as a new store, you're probably going to want to expand areas. I initially brought in just the top five companies in this, you know, category. Now I'm going to bring that up to the top seven companies in the category.
Right. And so it's a case of you're going to start out with the bare minimum, say $25,000-$30,000 worth of inventory. And eventually you want to get up to that $500,000 inventory, or, you know, but it's, you're going to have to grow it somehow. What's going to happen is you have to turn your product, and you have to turn the money you make from your product back into more product.
Right. And
You're not going to be taking product, you know, product profit out of the store for a while.
Right. And we'll get to that in a little bit here. But, you know, the other part of that in the inventory is you have to have the ability to grow your new releases. This industry is geared about new releases, which is why there are so many of them, because everybody realizes that if I want my game to continue to sell, I need to, on a regular basis, go out there and remind people it exists by coming out with another piece in the line. Whether that piece is driving more sales or just reminding people that it's there. Then we get into capital reserves, which is going back into this whole growth concept. Mm-hmm. You really need to plan to have enough capital to cover yourself minimally for 12 months of growth, and realistically enough capital reserves to get into your full operation situation, which is how long is it going to take you to show a profit? It's usually 18 months to 3 years because,
wow.
You know,
yeah.
Well, but the problem is why I say show a profit is what you're doing is you're turning so much of your profit initially back into growth, mm-hmm. which is what we were talking just a moment ago. You know, sure, I'm making some money over here and we're covering all my operation expenses and we're covering all my salaries and everything's going along very nicely. Got a good customer base building up. But, you know, I did only start out with that $20,000 worth of inventory. And, you know, my customer base is growing and I need to, you know, expand. You're reinvesting. So when we're talking about profits, we're talking about when you stop reinvesting and you can start really taking money out for having a successful location. Mm-hmm. And that normally, like I say, takes anywhere, depending on how well you've established yourself, 18 months to about 3 years. And that's also usually the did we make it line of
yes. Yeah, as you're, if your capital reserves start to run down between 18 months and 3 years, and it's not stabilizing, that's when that question comes up as well.
Yeah, you can no longer, you know, the problem simply is if you haven't kept enough cash reserves, if all you have is enough money to put that $20,000 worth of inventory on the shelf, you're already done.
Yeah.
Because you do have to have enough cash reserves to expand into the new releases and all the other growth areas that you're going to have to get into.
So let's talk about some of this. So, all right, so we're starting a store. And we're going to need, here, let me go back to the beginning of the list here. All right, so we're looking at a location, and what you pay per square foot on your lease is gonna vary. But let's look at some of the other stuff. We're talking about fixtures. I know from what I do for software, all right, for a point-of-sale system and associated inventory and QuickBooks and setup and things like that, you're going to budget somewhere between $2,000 and $4,000 for a small store setup would be a good way to do that. The software is only going to be part of that. The other part of that is going to be the paying somebody to make sure it's 100% set up or your time in terms of entering data. What do you think is the cost on fixtures, right? I was ballparking, say, $7,000 to $10,000 on fixtures.
So I was going to say,
wild-ass guess.
It really depends a lot, obviously, on square footage. But, you know, generally speaking, you need to be thinking in terms of about $10,000 to $15,000. And that's okay. Going to cover, you know, your register, and that's going to cover your point of sales software and all that types of stuff, and your physical fixtures. You know, do I have to put lights in the store? It's going to cost me more if I have to put new lights in the store.
Right.
Ideally, there's a lot of variables that you can't just blanket across simply because each location, each store, you know, is going to have different choices to be made.
So we'll say 10 to 15 on software setup and fixtures and
for basic fixtures to get
physical plant, right? We'll call
right.
it. And say anywhere from, what were we saying, $15,000 to $30,000 on inventory. 15 would be a little light. 30,000.
I would say we're probably talking more between $20,000 and $30,000 as your initial
dollars on that. We're gonna have ongoing operations and salaries. But those are gonna vary, right? So if you're in Florida, your electric bill is gonna be high in the summertime because of the air conditioning. But in the up north, your big expense is gonna be heat in the winter. So
your utilities are probably in when you get to electric and again it comes down to your utilities may be completely paid for in your rent. You may only have to cover electricity, whatever.
Yeah.
It varies quite a bit.
Yes.
But generally speaking, if you're budgeting your utilities for about $300 a month, you're probably good.
Okay. And so we're up approaching $50,000. And one of the things we haven't even talked about yet is marketing.
We haven't even talked about how you're going to promote your store or anything else. This is just getting yourself started.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily a one-time expense, right? You're going to want to do some special things to launch the store. But you're probably, if you're near a college or a high school, you're going to want to advertise in that high school or college paper on a fairly regular basis. And you're going to want to do other things as well. And all those cost money. And that's going to come out of your capital reserves.
Right.
So
there's a lot of, when we get into that, there's also a lot of guerrilla marketing tactics that you can get out and do. There's a lot less expensive ways to get out and do stuff. And there's places to promote yourself. Again, the problem in general is trying to generalize, because a lot of this is going to make a difference of where you're at. If you're in a strip mall, you're going to have a different position than you're the big mall. If you're in the big mall, they're going to offer you some advertising areas that you wouldn't have otherwise. You're going to be able to put a sign, throughout the mall and, probably three or four different locations, announcing the fact that you exist and to come and see you.
Right.
Those are big things because you're already looking, if you've invested into that big mall location, the reason you've done it is because of the foot traffic.
Yes.
And that's what you're trying to do is you're trying to drag that foot traffic to your location. Advertising directly in the mall, big advantage.
Well, that is, we're going to wrap that up on our, that's, Not everything you need to know to open a game store, but certainly everything you need to know to get to think about, right?
Things you need to start to consider when you're planning on all of this. There's a lot of details that we've left out. These are the broad sweeping ones. And if you haven't thought about these things, then you need to think about these things.
So if you'd like to provide us with your feedback and comments on this section or ask your detailed questions, we'll try and answer those. Sometimes we don't know either. How do they contact us?
Well, you can contact us by email at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast, or you can phone us at 773-634-9377. I want my jingle.
You're going to be waiting a while. We got to wait till Dan and Ivan get drunk again, and that's when they recorded our the other theme we got from them, the Lawyers, Guns, and Paper Money. The other way you can find us, folks, is we have an RSS feed, a dedicated RSS feed on purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. The next big event coming up in industry, Rhett?
That would be the Gamma Trade Show.
It's still out there. I think we've got a little over a month now. It's not end of March, is it?
It is the end of March.
It is the end of March. Okay, so we've only got a couple of weeks. Sorry about that. Yeah. And our next show, Rhett?
Will be March, 27th.
Take us out of here.
I was going to take us out of here. That's all for this show. I'm Rhett Kiff.
And I'm Ben Clark. Thanks for listening.